sip. Let's tune into Brad and Britt.
It's the Brad and Britt cast. You've been waiting all weekend for us to sum everything up for you in the world that happened in the last 3 days, and it's not going to do it because we don't know. No idea.
Yeah, we were busy drunk on the floor. What were you doing? I don't know. What's
wrong with you? We're not any smarter about this stuff than you.
Oh, I was sucking down Truly Seltzers all weekend long, just in the floor doing snow angels. I don't know. Why do you think I know anything?
Were you?
No.
I'm sitting here eating this shit from Costco.
What do you got? Oh, those are good.
Yeah. Oh, my God. This is
addictive.
Hoodies Almond Lovers Mix.
My God.
Dark chocolate covered almonds, white chocolate covered almonds, coconut macaroon flavored almonds, blanched almonds, roasted salmon sauce, salmon almonds, salted almonds.
Because if they have salmon almonds, that's going to be bad. That's not going to be good at all.
It's salmon. Boy, well, that's an old one, isn't it?
It sure is.
All right. I got a couple quick notes here. They're not big things, but if you can choose one of these, then we can go to something important. Number one, Kentucky, the Jewgrass state. Number two, let's play hide the texts.
All right.
Or number three, Ted Cruz says the loud portion out loud.
Let's do hide the text first, and then we can get on to the biggest asshole in Texas, and that's saying a lot. The Secret Service just can't find those texts from in and around the insurrection of January the 6th of 2021, but they have been ordered to find them. Got to get them by Tuesday, or you're in big trouble, mister.
I don't think that's a problem. I think because you really can't lose your texts, right? Because the carrier, don't they have your texts?
That's a murky thing. Some carriers keep them for up to 10 days. Some do not. There's a different standard, and there's no legal standard for them having to keep your text. So it's kind of hit and miss.
All right. We'll put that into the mix here and ask you the question. I'll answer it myself, too. When you get a new phone.
Yeah.
When you get it, is the first thing you try to do, I want to get rid of all of the contacts and texts that I have on messaging. It's very important. I'm getting a new phone, right?
Yeah. Wipe it clean. No, I was at the store one time, and the young lady, the thing had a SIM card in it. It activated right there, and my text started popping up, and I was like, no, don't look at those. No. So, yeah, that's not obviously what I do.
Yeah. All right. So, and then the other, they were accidentally erased. Mm-hmm. You can't accidentally erase a text. I don't know. I mean, you and I don't have the same phone. You have an Android app, but to get to erase or get rid of a text it's a several step process. You have to really try hard just in your regular,
It's not involuntary. It's a deliberate process. Yeah,
your text can't fall off of your phone.
Right. No, that's not going to happen.
Let's try to figure this out. They obviously had been texting beforehand, during, and after what was going on, and they obviously were either in support of or were agnostic about what was going on in front of them associated with Trump. And I can't prove this. This is just my theory that a collective decision was made at the top that the best thing to do, and we'll worry about what happens later if somebody really wants these, but this is like Nixon. In retrospect, remember, he always said, I should have burned the tapes. Okay.
Right.
If he would have burned the tapes, he would have still been in a shitload of trouble. But even Nixon realized that by burning the tapes, it would have been worse for the country, probably. So he didn't do it. For whatever reason, he didn't do it. But the Secret Service, in effect, burned the tapes here, right?
That's correct.
So the downside of burning the tapes to them was not as bad as the downside of them being revealed to have done something really, really wrong.
But wait a minute, Watergate boy, you missed a great chance for a Rosemary Woods thing. They just put their foot on the pedal and reached way over, and that's how they got rid of the text.
Right, right. And again, that's why, you know, Watergate is like single-A baseball compared to what has been going on by so many different parties, by multiple entities. And now we have the Secret Service. And my last check on the story was that the January 6th committee says, don't worry, we're getting them. We got them.
You're going to get them. But I mean, I think the more disturbing part is that it appears that there are at least certain people, I don't know if it's the leadership or who it is, who are covering for the worst president in our country's history. And that's a little disturbing to me.
Whatever happened to this, you know, we protect the presidency and the person holding the office at any given time. That's our job. But we are not partisan. We don't take, and clearly we know, just like judges, they're not perfect human beings and they're not fully unbiased. But this indicates something beyond that. In fact, when you think about it, when we saw what was going on inside the mind of Justice Alito, and he was speaking on behalf of several other justices back in May, when the leak of what was going to be the decision to overturn Roe versus Wade, remember that came out? That was unvarnished stuff. That was the real thing. The Secret Service says it ain't going to happen to us.
Right.
we're flushing that sucker. So now, you know, we have to investigate that. And, you know, it never, ever ends. It never ends. And it's really, really terrible. So the guy who's written a book here called Standing Next to History, An Agent's Life Inside the Secret Service. Of course, he was a former agent. He says the entire story that the texts were accidentally erased was bullshit.
Of course.
And he says it's a cover-up. It's criminal. That's kind of it. Emails and texts do not get erased. You may take them off your phone. You may take them off some server, but they exist somewhere in cyberspace. So the NSA should be able to get them. The committee should turn immediately to the National Security Agency to have every... Wait, the NSA knows all my texts?
Well, here's the deal. And to be fair, the Secret Service has been troubled for a while. But it was more along the lines of, hey, we got some hookers in South America, right? It wasn't, we aided and abetted insurrection. It wasn't really along those lines.
That was good shit. That was exactly. Good trouble, okay? That was good trouble, as John Lewis said. This is bad trouble.
Those were the good old days when all you had to do was worry about them coming back with a case of the clap. Now it's aiding and abetting insurrection. And it appears if Donald Trump is actually reelected, they're going to use WhatsApp from now on. So they can just scrub everything and nobody will ever get it. You won't use text at all. It'll be WhatsApp or Kick or Signal or one of those things where you'll never be able to, the text will disappear right up into the ether, and you'll never be able to find them again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. So that's the beginning of the week leading up to, I guess there'll be a mention of this, I would assume, at the prime time show on Thursday. The last in this opening series of hearings by the House of Representatives there. Okay? All right. Good enough. Kentucky, the Jewgrass state, or Ted Cruz says the loud portion out louder.
Let's do Cancun Ted because he's running his mouth again and he's just a moron.
Yeah. So Ted Cruz basically is saying flat out, we're going after gay marriage. We're going after that decision. We're going to get that sucker. Let me find the different version of it here. It's there it is. All right, that'll work. This was Saturday, and if this sounds familiar, the language, stop me. The Supreme Court was clearly wrong when it decided in 2015 that same-sex marriage was legal under the Constitution. Sound familiar? That was a 5-4 decision. That was back in the good old days when Justice Kennedy would take the right side on a lot of these issues, and he would be the fifth vote.
But now we got us a brand new team.
We got Brett Kavanaugh, one of his old law clerks, taking his place. So that 5-4 goes the other way very often. The case was Obergefell versus Hodges. Obergefell is Phil around. See him. He's a nice fellow. Anyway, the decision back then made it illegal for any state, D.C., to deny you a marriage certificate if you're a same-sex couple. You got to allow it. Boom. All right. So Ted Cruz says we're going to hopefully go after that, which means I guess that's kind of a, I don't know if that's a signal. Not that the Supreme Court pays attention to what Ted Cruz says. You can imagine that they do, because they can take a case anytime they want. But you can see the skids are greased here. Bad language, in effect. Sorry. What did I say?
It's a common saying. That's all it is.
You know what? May two members of your family get monkeypox before next week.
Yes.
Thank you. So that one's up. That's going to be next. They're all coming here, and
I know to the so-called values voter, I know that this is like Viagra. I know that they're getting rock hard. But I don't think statements like this from Ted Cruz really helps the Republicans for the midterms, because I do think a lot of Americans are kind of okay with gay marriage.
Yeah, well, it's sort of like we moved on from that.
Yeah, kind of.
Well, and you know, the real laboratory experiment with legalized gay marriage in America now for, 6-7 years, which for most of us who said, you know, let her rip, let's have it, let's stop bugging these people, let them get married if they want, was just the two people who you don't know getting married. Does that affect your life? Does that change you?
Right.
You got a couple. And so now after 6 or 7 years, what Ted Cruz is saying is not based on, it turns out a lot of neighbors' lives were ruined because there was a gay couple in the next apartment. That's not what happened. Okay? This is just bigotry. This is just hate. This is just homophobia. This is just playing to the worst element of American society. And this is all about, and you know, for years, Britt, occasionally, we bring up this idea that when you think about what conservatism is now, what Republicans play for right now, it's beginning with, but not exclusive to, let's first of all repeal the 60s. And of course, the 60s very often aren't really the beginning of anything. They're just a continuation. The real beginning, of course, is, you know, 1865, the Civil War ends, and people start to get, in various ways, more rights granted to them that had not been granted to them originally by the writers of the Constitution. So I want to say they're getting new rights. They're just getting the rights that they should have had all along, mm-hmm. like black people being citizens, like getting equal protection under the law, like women being able to vote, like black people being able to vote without having to tell you how many beans are in the jar. With people who are not of the same skin color that you are being able to sit on the bus anywhere they want, or go to school and sit next to you, all these kinds of things. And this is just another piece of that puzzle. Would you not agree? It's just bring it on. Let's get rid of this one.
Sure.
Everything.
That was another one of those a few weeks ago when they did overturn Roe v. Wade. There were some people like, well, I guess that thing about interracial marriage, that Loving decision, is going to be coming up next. Oh, shut up, stupid liberal. That's not going to happen. They'll never do that. I don't know. I mean, if you're going to go with gay marriage, I don't know what the next domino to topple would be after that.
I can tell you how they'll do that one. That's easy. Yeah. You can't go, well, Clarence Thomas is married to a white woman. Therefore, they're going to avoid it. It's never going to come up. No, it's going to be from that day forward.
Right. Their grandfather. Yeah.
They're going to grandfather in, of course, all previous ones, because that would be really mean. That's what they'll do. In other words, this is a bad analogy, but with abortion, they're not going back 2 years, 5 years, 6 years and looking for people who had abortions to prosecute them. No, not do it. It's from now going forward. So that's kind of an interesting wiggle. I would think imagine if they take a case about interracial marriage, and remember, they take a case and they argue it in November, and they don't make the decision or they don't announce it until the next June. So you would cause a rash of interracial marriages that may have been at the point, oh, here's my fiance, guess who's coming to dinner? No, they're all going to run out and get married ahead of time. Isn't that, it's got to happen, right?
I don't know. I mean, I everything's on the table, and I'm not sure exactly, why there's such a bee under Ted Cruz's bonnet, unless he thinks this is his chance to be president. Like, he can ride this one to be the nominee for the Republican Party. Do you think that's probably what he's thinking?
That's just part of his repertoire. It's just another thing. Speaking of Texas, and I'm working this out. This is real time working this out, because I just haven't thought of it. Because Thursday, at the hearing in Washington by the January 6th committee, apparently it's going to be built. The main theme is going to be how Donald Trump did nothing. And, of course, he actually encouraged, but then was completely passive and actually thrilled as to what he was seeing on January 6th. We know the groups that were supportive of this, that there's a connection, it all weaves together, and they're going to try to tie it all up on Trump's lack of behavior, dereliction of duty, whatever you want to call it, and being responsible for the deaths because he did nothing. Now, does that sound eerily familiar with what happened in Texas at an elementary school a couple of months ago?
Number eight.
It's not that the police officers and the state police and everyone, all, was it 376 people who were there?
Correct.
None of them were happy with what was going on. I would never impugn them to say they're as bad as Trump. But in terms of their inaction, in the face of death, a crisis, something knowable.
Hearing the screams of children in real time,
right, and not stopping it. There's some kind of bizarre symmetry there. In other words, if I was a editorial cartoonist, if I was a good one, I would put Trump in a police officer's uniform and put him in the school in Uvalde, because remember, issue number one is no one was in charge, right? No one gave any orders to anybody, and no one questioned the fact that there wasn't someone in charge, which made it even more unbelievable with these hundreds of mostly well-trained, very well-equipped people. So I would draw the cartoon, and I would put Trump suddenly in there as, I'm in charge, do nothing. Okay, don't do a thing. That's so how it works.
This Pete Arredondo character, he becomes the Donald Trump of that situation, sort of?
In a way, yeah. Yeah.
It's the report was issued, in case you missed it, and I don't think you did, on Sunday. I think this was the Texas House investigation. And they mostly blamed Pete Arredondo and the Uvalde Police Department there, the city, whatever they call that. But they also kind of split the baby at the end and said, well, there was a lot of other agencies on scene, and they probably should have done something too. So there was some some stuff there. And they, as Brad said, there were nearly 400 law enforcement agents on the ground in some way, shape, or form, and nobody could figure out who was in charge. Nobody could figure out what to do. Protocols that had been studied, well established, were not really even brought into question or even talked about. And that's when they sat there. 77 minutes, I believe, is the word that I'm getting. 77 minutes that they just kind of stood around and didn't do anything.
Yeah. It's just beyond words. It's beyond sad. It's beyond horrible. And when you read or hear about the history of this guy who did it, this could set the all-time record for red flags going up everywhere.
Right.
I mean, everybody knew. I mean, his nickname in school was the school shooter. It was. We kind of said, well, oh, in his yearbook, it said most likely to shoot up. He said it. He told people that he was going to do this. He was absent 100 days a year, several years during his school days. That's a signal you've got somebody and nothing was done.
Yeah.
Nothing was done. It was there. Yet, he was able to obtain firearms so easily, so quickly. And it appears that he had never, ever even shot a gun. This was first time. But I guess that's a testament. I would assume that the gun manufacturer should be taking out an ad saying, this is how great our product is. You don't ever have to have used it first time.
Oh, yeah. No, you don't need practice. You don't need experience. You don't need any of that.
That's right. Our weaponry is so excellent. But between fitting the demographic profile, male, 18 years old, right there, same thing, every time, white male. I don't know. I don't know how we if tomorrow we had every kind of reasonable gun regulation that we should have in this country, the number of weapons that are out there is so massive that I guess all of these people who, and they do buy them new. Isn't that interesting? We need to check this, because it does seem that certainly in the last couple shootings, the guy up in Illinois, the July 4th shooter, right, and the Uvalde, Texas shooter, a lot of these young guys, they buy new guns. So if we could completely make that an airtight situation, what would happen? I would guess that then you go to the secondary market and the millions and millions, tens of millions of guns that are going around, that they would still be able to be obtained. I guess, and you don't know the answer to this, this is rhetorical, if you couldn't buy guns so easily, new weaponry, would these kind of people just kind of by definition be deterred? Because I think that the easy access to buying a new gun does make it a lot easier to do this. But
there's an entire economic system based on them getting easy access to new stuff.
All right, but let's pretend that economic system.
But no, that's not guns. Something you just skip by. That's the point of all of this.
You're right. You're right. It is. But even if that was fixed, would that fix this problem? And I think it would go a long way. Nothing is perfect, and every time something happens, everybody plays Monday morning quarterback and says, well, that wouldn't have prevented this or that wouldn't have prevented that. Some guy in a mall in Indiana kills three people, and there was somebody else in there with a gun who took the guy out. That was the famous good guy with a gun scenario. And, of course, that will be used now for the next 500 years to prove that everyone walking around in a mall or a public place should be armed in case something like this happens. But as you know, the numbers and the statistics of that happening are very, very small. It usually doesn't work out so easily. It doesn't work out so cleanly.
And in fact, the good guy,
happy when it does, but it doesn't always work.
The good guy with the gun has caused a lot of problems and has resulted in several deaths. There are a lot of stories about that as well. But no, they're going to try to hold this up as some sort of anecdotal example of exactly what could happen and why you stupid fuzzy-headed liberals should allow every gun in hospitals and daycares and everywhere in the world. There should be a vending machine the next time you go to a concert, Brad, when you go to the Greensboro Coliseum, and you should just be able to go ahead and swipe your card, grab an AR, head to your seat with some popcorn. That's essentially what these assholes think.
Speaking of that, are you up or down on going to see Springsteen here?
Oh, I don't think I'm going to go. I'm not the kind of fan that, but I'll be happy to let some other people enjoy it. I'm sure it'll be great.
Well, they weren't asking your permission.
No, I'm not going to go.
They would enjoy it. That wasn't.
I would almost feel guilty like taking the spot of somebody who's a bigger fan, to be honest with you.
Boy, that is the kind of selfless.
Yeah.
Wow, that's fantastic.
I like him. I don't love him. I mean, I know people who have seen him several times, and I'm sure if I went, it would be fantastic, put on a great show. But I just feel like, you know, it's just not. It's not for me.
I'm telling you have to go. I'm not.
No, you are. Yeah, you are. You're telling me. No,
I saw him once. That was enough for me. I'm done.
It's like, I mean, and when you get to this stage in anybody's life, really, you know, this may be the last chance you'll get to see him. Obviously, and that's been the way it's been for a few tours now. But there are a lot of fans who are like, "Hey, this is the last chance I'm going to get to see this guy." And God bless you. I'm glad he came back around, and I'm glad he scheduled the show. And God, I wish Pearl Jam would do the same thing. Because we really wish that would have happened. But yeah, I'm happy for everybody.
Hold on. Wait a second.
Yeah.
You think what is Springsteen like? 71, something like that.
Yeah.
You think he's near the end of the line? He seems like the kind of guy that
he does, but we never know.
I know we never know. I mean, when somebody went and saw Janis Joplin when she was 26, nobody said, "Oh, you know, this could be the last time we get to see her."
I think we're all in agreement that 71 is way closer to the end than 26 for most people. I think we're fairly sure that that's the deal. You don't know. You don't know if the guy's going to go, fuck it. I'm just going to park the Jeep and write some poems.
Bruce Springsteen would be the youngest president in U.S. history.
Nobody's making fun of his age. Just that you get up to a certain point in time. How long has he been?
He's in good shape.
He's been rocking for 50 years now. You know, 50 years. There aren't a lot of people, doing it after 50 years that keep continuing to do it. This could be your final time. I've said that, I've said that for Pearl Jam. They've been a band for 30 years. There aren't many bands that are around for 30 years. Next time I see them could be the last time. They may just decide, fuck it, we're going to go home. We hate each other. It's over. We're going to surf. You never know. You just have no idea if that's the last time you're going to be seeing that person.
So Rolling Stones are at 60, okay? Mm-hmm. Their odometer has never been turned back. They're at 60 years.
Anecdotal, yes, but that's accurate. Okay. They would be in the rarefied 0.0000001% of right. people.
And,
yeah.
And as you know, it's already been determined that if the planet warms, death starts to sweep the earth, famine occurs, storms get worse, Keith Richards will survive it all.
Of course, yes. There's no question about that. I never bet against that. Well,
and we'll take that guy out. Nothing.
And there have been various times in that band's history. 1980, 1981, people would have said, you'll never see him again. It's over. They're done. They folded it in. They can't stand each other. They want to kill each other. They're never coming back. You know, 1990 or something. Like before that stupid Steel Wheels album came out. Oh, they'll never get back together. They hate each other. There's no possible way. That's happened about 7 times in that band's history, right?
Well, Britt, that's not unprecedented in American history when the founders or the original starts to have terrible. I said Meet the Press would go off the air when Lauren Spivak
that was it.
Retired.
It's never going to make
Larry
it.
Spivak. And by the way, that's the all-time most pathetic and obscure reference you'll ever hear on this. Lauren Spivak, host of Meet the
Press. I was hoping the Tonight Show would die with Jimmy Fallon, but it's still on, and they still have it. So it's
no, no, the Tonight Show did die.
Oh God! Nobody told. Just they haven't told it yet.
They haven't told him yet. The audience apparently hasn't clued into it yet. Not going to happen.
We need to talk about Kentucky Jewgrass.
Oh boy!
The Kentucky Jewgrass story needs to be explored for a little bit here.
Oh boy! Well, you know everything is. It's blowing up here on my.
We have fans of the Brad and Britcast in Kentucky.
Yeah, I'll bet we do.
We do. They listen quite a bit.
All right, here we go. This is Bracken County, Kentucky.
Hello.
Wherever that is. Friday morning, the Republican Party shared a post about the new director of the U.S. Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. His name is Steve Dettelbach, Dettelbach. He's Jewish. In that post, the Republican Party of Bracken County, Kentucky said Dettelbach was, quote, part of the Jewish junta. Junta. A great junta. Word.
That's one way. That was a big 80s word, as I recall.
It was a big 40s or 30s word. Okay. The chairman of the Kentucky Jewish Council, Rabbi Shlomo Litvin, said it's an attempt to silence our community, and we will not be silenced. There's a line that's been making its way around social media. The Jews are tired. That was initially a part of my response. Yeah, we're tired of it, right? The head of the county responded and said, I was made aware of an inappropriate post on our Facebook page. The post does not represent the values of the Bracken County Republican Party, which means it always represents the values of the Republican Party.
Because as we know, the real anti-Semites are the liberals, right? The Democrats are the real anti-Semites.
It was incredibly insensitive. We'll investigate how this occurred. We'll commit to a tighter oversight of our social media going forward. According to the Louisville Courier-Journal, Mr. Kirkendall later told them the page was hacked and they decided to just get rid of their entire Facebook page because they were getting, that's right, hacked. Here we go.
It's I got the, hacked.
Every time it was like hacked, right?
That's great. It's usually porn. It's usually like a screenshot of somebody, you know, jacking off to Pornhub and that's, oh my God, my phone's been overtaken by an alien.
Rabbi Litvin wasn't having any part of that bullshit. He says, come on, it doesn't matter where it came from. It was on their page. And he says, this is not the first time. And by the way, there's a Jewish guy running for mayor of Louisville. You may remember this story came and went, but because it was Louisville, it didn't get quite the, there was an attempted assassination on him a few months ago.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Remember that?
I think they've got a long and storied history of Jewish community in Louisville. There's a Jewish hospital in Louisville, for example. Well, I mean, there's a big
Brit there everywhere.
And by the way, Bracken County is southeast of the famous airport in Covington, Kentucky, which is actually the Cincinnati airport. So it's about 42 miles southeast is what we're looking at. Right along the High River, Brad.
Mm-hmm. All right. So that's Kentucky.
When do you people have your junta meetings? Is that a Zoom call or what do you guys, when do you guys do that?
When we have 13 men available.
We have 13
Jewish guys. Now that it's being talked about out in the open even more than it has been in the past, I think we can talk about it here. The polling and the surveys and the rest. I think we alluded to this last week. I don't think we went all in on it about Joe Biden's age, Donald Trump's unfitness, and the dreadful possibility of a rematch in 2024. I just can't. You remember when you were a kid? Because you were a kid when this was going on, but I know you know it. Mm-hmm. It seemed like the Lakers and the Celtics would play every fucking year in the NBA Finals. Remember that?
Yeah.
Really got tired. And, again. And, of course, it was a big show because they were two popular teams with national constituencies.
And they were the direct opposite of each other. One team was tragically white. One was appropriately black. There was East Coast, West Coast, yeah. All of those things.
Right, all that. But that pales in comparison to the idea, the possibility, the dread that we see down the tracks if Trump announces the opposition falls away and he becomes the candidate again. And I'm putting aside all the reasoning that he's doing it, which, of course, the only reason really is to try to make himself immune from prosecution and investigation.
Well, that's now the family business. that's how he makes money.
Right. But just putting that aside, and let's just say it does happen, because I think we have to get way past it. It can't happen because, you know, we didn't think it would happen when he fucking fell down that escalator and started being a racist 5 minutes later. We thought, that's probably not a great start. Well, you know, what do we know? So if he stumbles on through, and Joe Biden, in the most oblivious fit of it's not all about me when it's all about me, says, I'm going to run at age 82 for a second term. What do we have to show for it here? What the hell happens? Can you imagine the debate between those two? This time, and it was bad enough the last time. Okay. Trump gets more crazy probably from a physiological point of view, brain-wise, every day.
Yeah.
So add on another 2 years, more than 2 years, before the presidential election, and he'll be even crazier.
It's these guys. He'll be these guys right here. That's who you'll be seeing on the debates. I'm holding up the guys from the Muppets in the for those of you who are not, this is not video. Yeah, it'll be those two. But I think you're looking at this the wrong way. There's also like the certain thing about people who get to a certain age don't give a fuck what they say. So anything could come out of their mouths. I mean, when you have a couple of senior citizens up there, that would be something.
Yeah, but I think you're underselling that.
Yeah.
I think it's way more than that. I mean, Trump has been that way since he was probably eight. Okay. Never cares. That's part of the shtick. And you know, Joe Biden, you know, just gaffes his way through. Most of the time it's not a big deal, but it gets amplified and it gets turned into a thing. And you know, he makes it a week.
I'm 18 years old in 1988. That was the first election, the presidential election I could vote in. And this is part of the Generation X angst at the time. Was we had George H.W. Bush was elected president, I think everybody knows, in 1988. So part of our angst was, oh, my God, we've had the two oldest presidents in U.S. history elected back to back. Reagan and George H.W. Bush. This has lapped that times a million. Right?
Nobody remembers that anymore. See, that's interesting that you remember that, because as you say it, I recall it being a thing, but it was a thing for about a minute.
Right.
Because it turned out that George H.W. Bush, his age was not relevant at all. He was a sprightly guy, went on to live many, many more years, and started jumping out of airplanes every year to celebrate his birthday. So it really didn't matter. He was, in great shape and all those kind of things. So, but you're right. We Reagan, right, for his second term, I think he was 73.
Right.
When he was reelected.
But he was gone. He was completely gone. I mean, his mind was completely gone that second term.
It was certainly on its way. It was certainly.
He was done. He was not. I mean, at least in the last couple of years, he wasn't running the country.
But imagine Reagan at age 82.
Yeah.
running. I mean, by the time he was 82, there was nothing left.
Yeah, but we've had so many.
He was fully into Alzheimer's.
We've had so many medical advances since the 80s, and Prevagen's been on the market for a while. It's disconcerting. I mean, I'm not crazy about it. You know, I was reading, and I don't follow this the way that some people do. I'm pretty into politics, but not as hardcore as some people. The Fix in the Washington Post, they've got like a running top 10 list of Democratic contenders. You've seen it?
Saw it. Roy Cooper's in.
Roy Cooper at number 9. He's been as high as number 6. I mean, I'm a little shocked. I don't know.
By the way, remember, he only made it number 6 because the Beatles held the first 5 spots.
Those bastards.
It's been done before. It was amazing.
She loves me. I want to hold your hand. Blah, 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 blah.
She loves you, but okay.
Yeah, she loves me too. But that was the flip side. You missed it. Yeah, Roy Cooper, and I don't know what this – I mean, the selling point for people who do this sort of stuff in Washington, who kind of slide the name over, go look at this guy, go look at this guy. You know, it's the purple state guy, and he's been able to avoid – I don't know. Again, I love Roy Cooper. I'd vote for him again, but the slogan is, the boring Democrat we need. I think that's basically the selling point for Roy Cooper. But he's been able to do a lot. They pointed out in the little piece that I saw – he didn't even really want to run for governor when he was attorney general, but they were like, yeah, you might want to go ahead and do this. You might want to go ahead and make this happen. And he did, and he ran against Pat McCrory, and he won. It was a very close race.
No, but it's just good to be in the mix. It's good to be on the list.
It is.
Doesn't matter whether you're going to do it or not.
I just want to remind and people who are watching this outside of North Carolina, listening to this outside of North Carolina, what an absolute shit show this state would be if Dan Forrest was the governor. If the guy who was running against Roy Cooper had been governor right now, you would be lining up teenage girls and giving them ultrasounds like at truck stops right now. It would be absolutely disastrous.
Oh, we'd be in terms of abortion laws and things of that sort. It would be dreadful. Having a Democratic governor is the last backstop against insanity, and having a Democratic governor won't mean anything if in November the Republicans in this state increase their lead in the legislature, in the bodies of the legislature, to get veto-proof majorities. And they're not that far away from it, which means they could start passing all this draconian bullshit that you see in other states, and the governor would have no power to stop it. So there really is a lot on the line. Bert, I'm going to say something. I know you've never heard this before. This is the most important election of your life.
It is of our lives. Do we know if our crazy-ass lieutenant governor is actually going to run for governor? Has he declared yet?
Well, but that's not till 24, so.
Still, you got to get on the ground going. And the presidential election is not till 24 either, Brad.
I know. Well, but we don't care. We have a lot of shit to take care of in the interim. We have to try to flip the Senate seat in North Carolina from Richard Burr to the Democrat Sherry Beasley, and not let the fucking gun store owner nominee of the Republican Party, Ted Budd.
Well, that's what we were. I mean, when we talked about this earlier, when we were talking about the easy access to guns, she hasn't tagged him with that. And I think that's obviously like something they've looked at, but they don't want the crazy ass gun grabber folks here in North Carolina, the people who scream about that, to be railing about that. So she uses the soft touch on that. The Ted Budd has been the guy who has economically benefited from laws that allow dangerous people to easily get their hands on dangerous weapons.
I think, I think whatever you appear to be saying about a reticence to go after Ted Budd on guns right now is not because she's afraid of the gun grabbers or the gun nuts. I think it's a deliberate strategy to hold back until the right moment. Because you don't want to use it all up right now. I mean,
because I'm the guy that said it really doesn't start until Labor Day. I'm the guy that came up with that. So, yes, that's when all that stuff happens.
To be really cynical about it, maybe she's waiting for about 7 more mass shootings.
Also, next week,